We have a number of guests today, and you are indeed our honored guests. We appreciate you very much for coming out, even, especially on a rainy day like this. By the way, by 7 o'clock tonight, the rain's supposed to be gone. Yay. You're going to be long dry by then, right? We have a full morning and early afternoon together. We're celebrating Jim and Helen Bowers, 65 years that they have been blissfully married. Well, Jim has been blissfully married for 65 years. We'll find out how long Helen has been blissfully married when we get in the back. But we are excited about them being here with us today, and we're going to have a meal after services this morning. We'll all make our way to the back. There's lots of food. It's a beautiful spread. We're going to have a good time back there, and then we will come back after the meal, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1:30, come back in here for an afternoon devotional, I'll give you part two of my sermon this morning, and it's real short, and then we'll go home for the day. You can spend this evening with your family. You can visit another congregation if you choose, or a gospel meeting, or whatever. Just enjoy this evening with your family on this special day. I've been asked to announce that on the table in the back, there's still two or three directories. If you did not get one, feel free to get one. We will be printing more this week, so there will be more out there so you can have a second one. Because if you're like me, you need one in two or three different places in the house. So we'll have more directories printed out there. But also on the table in the back, there is a green sheet. It is the food group sheet. And ladies, we're asking you to go by and look at that sheet. Find your name on the sheet. If you will just read what it says, you'll know exactly what to do. You don't have to put a mark or anything unless you, for some reason or another, cannot participate. Then you need to either mark through your name or put the appropriate mark, as the sheet asks you to do, beside your name. So please look at that before you get away so that we can get that put together we can make sure we're providing food for those that need our expression of love in this way. The text in Ecclesiastes 11, and I know I'm forgetting something and I don't remember what it is, so just have to pardon me on that. In Ecclesiastes chapter 11, the text this morning, Solomon ends the text with the statement, "For childhood and youth are vanity." And what that means is fleeting. We use the word vanity like, you know, he's so vain, he looks in the mirror, sees himself, loves his face. You know, that's not how Solomon is using the word vanity. It has to do with temporary, passing away. It's not going to last. Childhood goes away very, very quickly. But the emphasis of this text, we will see as the lesson progresses. We're going to talk about joy this morning. And I want to give you some good advice about joy. I know what you want. I know what life is all about, and I know what you want. You want the same thing that everybody else wants. You want joy. You want peace. You want happiness. You want to be satisfied, contented. These things top the most wanted list of things that people all over this world want. And we don't want to have to wait for them either. We want them right now, don't we? Just like patience. I want patience now. Well, we want these things now. We don't want to have to wait. If you ask a small child, would you like an ice cream cone today, right now, or would you like 5 ice cream cones tomorrow? What is the child going to choose? They're going to take the one they can get right now. That's typical. Now, adults, if we're smart, we will take the tomorrow. But children, now I see Caleb back there shaking his head. Caleb, you're not a little child anymore. You've understood some things, but you get, I don't think Josiah would make that choice. The point is that we want joy now. We want to be happy right now. But you don't have to look long. You don't have to look far to realize that most people are not successful in their search, in their quest for joy and happiness. Most people don't find it. Why is that? Well, in every generation, man has sought to be happy. He wants joy. This is the rest of the text, sorry. He wants joy. Okay? Now, this to me is the perfect image of joy. Y'all remember Charlie Brown and Snoopy? He'd do his Snoopy dance whenever he was happy. Y'all remember that? But I want you to think about joy. The look, expression on a child's face when they are just so happy. And we want that. And we've had it at moments. Everybody has moments of it. But I want my life to be filled with it. I want there to be so much joy in my life because everywhere I look, I see on the news, and I don't like watching the news. Faith thinks I just don't want to be informed. I don't like watching the news because it's so depressing. Bad news is what sells papers. But it's misfortune and violence and broken homes and all kinds of suffering and death. And it's just depressing. The news is filled with that. So can we be happy? Can we have joy? Or are we just supposed to grin and bear it? Is that what we're supposed to do? Put on a happy face? Pack up your troubles in your old kit bag and smile, boy, smile. By the way, the fellow that wrote that committed suicide. That is a fact. The fellow that wrote that song later in his life committed suicide. It doesn't work. You can't just grin and bear it. We need real joy, real peace, real happiness in our lives to find any sense of peace. We need that. But how do we get it? How do we get it? Long ago, the wisest man who ever lived set out to find the meaning of happiness, the meaning of life, the meaning of joy. He set out to find it, and he went through so much. Solomon went through every desire, every thought of his heart. He did what he wanted to do. He sought fame and fortune and fleshly pleasures, and it did not work for him, did it? He did not find it. His conclusion was life is vanity. What does that mean? It's temporary. It's passing. It's not going to last. It's not going to last. All these things we surround ourselves with. We bought a new dishwasher. Now, Faye had an old dishwasher, but his hands kept getting wrinkled. So we bought a new dishwasher. It don't work worth anything. It's terrible. I don't know what we're going to do with it. And it doesn't matter how much money you spend. Things break down, don't they? They don't last. You buy a very expensive car. Guess what? It's going to have to go to the shop. And then you're going to pay some more money. Things just don't last. And Solomon found that out. His conclusion in all this is the Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13, 14. Because see, Solomon, and we'll read that in a minute, but Solomon, he didn't realize that the thing he'd been searching for all his life had been sitting right at his doorstep all along, unclaimed. You see, like so many today, Solomon sought a heart filled with joy, but he sought it without God, and he failed. And so is every other person on the planet. You try to find happiness and peace, you try to find joy and contentment, and you leave God out of the equation, you are going to fail. And so the conclusion of the matter, Ecclesiastes 12, 13, 14, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep His commandments, for this is man's all, New King James. King James says, the whole duty of man. This is everything about our life is wrapped up in this. For God will bring in every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Joy was the thing that Solomon was seeking to find. That's what he wanted, joy. In Ecclesiastes 2, 24 through 26, nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? As the wisest man, he is the king. As one comedian said, it's good to be king. And it was. But he said, who can have it more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner, he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Do you remember the story of the rich man and Lazarus? The rich man, he did well every day, but he died. Do you remember the other story of the man that had much goods laid up for many years? He decided he'd tear down his old barns and build bigger barns because he's got so much stuff. I've gathered so much good stuff for myself. And God says to him this night, "Thou fool, this night thy soul is required of thee. Then whose shall these things be?" See, Solomon says the wicked man is going to work and gather and all this, but God's going to give it to somebody else. It's not going to go with you. You're not going to keep it. Solomon says this too is passing away. So that's not the source. That is not the source of joy. The conclusion is that we can and should enjoy what we have because it is a gift of God. And Paul found the reason to rejoice. In Philippians 4:4, you know this passage, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I will say rejoice." Paul rejoiced in the nearness of God, verse 5. He rejoiced in that he could be free from worry, verse 6, and that he could pray to God and God would listen, verse 6 as well, that he was at peace with God, verse 7. This is all Philippians 4. That he was thinking on the right things, whatsoever things are noble or just or pure or lovely or of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's any praise, think on these things, meditate on these things. Paul could rejoice in being an example to others, verse 9. He could rejoice in that he was learning contentment, verse 11. "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am therewith to be content." He learned how to roll with the punches, as verse 12 says. "I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." He learned how to roll with the punches. You don't understand that boxing term. He found strength in Jesus Christ. Verse 13 says, "I can do all things. I can endure all things through Christ who is my strength, who strengthens me." Paul learned all this because he could rejoice because he was in the Lord. He could rejoice in the Lord because he was in the Lord. If one is not in the Lord, they have no basis for rejoicing. They have no basis for joy. If God is not in their life, what do they have? Was the Ethiopian eunuch rejoicing as he was traveling to Ethiopia from Jerusalem? Not at the present. He was struggling. He was reading Isaiah the prophet and he was tore up. He couldn't understand it. There was no joy. He wasn't rejoicing. But when Philip came along and taught him about Jesus and baptized him into Christ, the Spirit of the Lord caught away Philip that the eunuch saw him no more. But the man went on his way rejoicing. From that moment forward, he had joy. He was rejoicing that God had saved his soul. Joy comes after one obeys the Lord. We have to be in Christ before we can rejoice in the Lord. But once we're Christians, how do we keep that joy? A man was walking down the road and he saw a Christian lady and she was singing, at the top of her voice, just singing. And the man says, "Where did you find all that happiness?" And she said, "I didn't find it. I made it." Well, that makes sense. Can happiness be found in the display case or on a shelf in a department store? A whole lot of people look for it there. They try to find it, new pair of shoes, some nice jewelry, an excellent meal, a nice suit of clothes. You're not going to find it there. You find a momentary lapse in the feelings that trouble your heart, but you're not going to find happiness in those things. Happiness and joy, that's something we choose to have. It is a deliberate outgrowth of a serious attempt to love and obey God. It comes when we love and obey God. We will find happiness, we will find joy, because we're going to make it right there in our hearts. Now, sometimes we confuse laughter and joy, okay? Sometimes, you know, you can make anybody laugh. You can take a very miserable person and you can make them laugh for a little while. Something funny, a child says something, a little puppy dog rolls around on the floor, they hear something on television, some funny joke is told, and they may laugh for a moment. And it's a temporary release, a temporary escape. But that's the same way that drugs work. That's the same way that anything one does as an escape works. You can play a video game and you can escape for a little while, but guess what? You're going to turn that thing off eventually, and then you're facing the realities of life all around you. Some very miserable people can be made to laugh, but they're not happy. Their lives are not filled with joy. Most of the time, laughter is simply a cloak that covers some inner confusion or turmoil. It's sort of like wearing a smiling mask. We may be laughing on the outside and crying on the inside. Remember the song Tears of a Clown? Remember that? That's a classic example of this very thing. I'm smiling on the outside, but there's tears going down. The tears of a clown. Well, today, for the next few minutes, I want to suggest 9 helpful tips for a heart that overflows with joy. 9. But we're only going to do 5 this morning. And then we'll look at 4 very briefly after lunch today. Number 1, make up your mind to be happy. Have you ever had to choose between 2 things that you wanted and you just couldn't decide? Which one is it? What do I want? Do I want the chicken or the fish? What do you want? Make up your mind. Well, that's. I remember my dad say that to me. Make up your mind. Well, folks, that's exactly what we have to do. We have to make up our mind to be happy. Abraham Lincoln once said most people are just about as happy as they make up their minds to be. What's the message? You expect to be happy and joyful, and then you start acting that way. Are you listening? You expect to be happy, and then you act happy. Ecclesiastes 11 verse 1, it says, cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Now, I don't know why that works, and I don't know how it works. I just know it works. When you put something into it, you're going to get something out of it. When you apply your mind to happiness, you're going to be happy. It's not that you're trying to be happy. It's not that you're seeking it. But you are choosing to be happy. You are choosing to have a good attitude, a good heart. And the opposite is also true. You can think yourself into being miserable. Okay? You can pretend that you feel bad long enough that you will actually feel bad. One man said, I never expect to have a happy day. Can you imagine living like that? I never expect to have a happy day. And then there's that old country music song. I was looking at this up last night. Stop the world and let me off. I'm tired of going round and round. I played the game of love and lost, so stop the world and let me off. I just hate to have to live like that. Just totally giving up. Brethren, we have to make up our mind that we're going to claim the joy that Jesus offers us. In John 15, verse 9, beginning, as the Father loved me, I also have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full. Make up your mind to be happy. Second, locate the center of life. Now, where is the center of the universe? I don't know. Well, where's the center of the earth? Well, it's down there somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where. Where's the center of your life? We have to locate that. We have to find it. It's not something you're just going to see. It's not something you're just automatically going to realize. You have to look for it. You have to figure out what it is. What is at the center of your life? What is it you want more than anything? What are you seeking? What are you trying to accomplish? What is the most important to you? As one old preacher said, keep the main thing the main thing. What is the center of your life? You've got to locate that. And if something is going to have any real meaning, it has to relate to something that's going to last. See, Solomon, all through Ecclesiastes, he uses the word vanity. It's not lasting. It's not going to stay. It's just temporary. But for life to have any real meaning, we've got to hang on to something eternal, something that's going to last forever. If a man's life is going to be happy and rich and rewarding, he's got to have at the center something he truly believes in, not just something he does. The earth revolves around the sun. Nations and states have their capitals. The county has its courthouse. The city, its city hall. The home is built around the parents. And the wheel has its hub. And the Christian directs his life to hold Christ in the exact center. That's what Paul says in Galatians 2 and 20. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. The center of the life of a Christian is Christ. That's the heart. That's the center. Do you want a life of joy? Then you have to put Christ in his rightful place in your heart and in your life. Locate the center of your life and put Jesus there. He's got to be the most important thing that you deal with. And then determine why you are living. Why are you living? This is not about why somebody else is living. Why all they live for is this or that. No, it's about you. Why are you living? What is your reason for drawing another breath? Now think about it. Why are you living? There's the age-old question. What's the point? What's the use? The existentialist, Albert Camus. Boy, his name is spelled Albert Camus. But the French pronounce things in a different way. Albert Camus. Existentialist. He basically concluded life is not worth living. And ultimately, he killed himself. Killed himself. What a silly thing to do. Life is not worth... Is this all there is? Is this all there is? That's the question that people ask. Many people are like the man that visited the church service. Told him he was just passing through. And they said, well, where are you going? He said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What a way to live. Did you hear about the drunk who went into the bar and he said, is anybody in here going anyplace? Well, evidently not. They're not going anyplace. The hitchhiker, he thumbs on one side of the road and then he crosses over and thumbs the other way. I mean, where are you going? I don't know. There's the lady that said, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm on my way. Oh my. We need to know what our purpose in life really is if we ever hope to fulfill it. We have to. And the purpose of existence is anything that will glorify our Maker. That's the purpose of our existence. But you have to make that call for yourself. Why are you living? Now, I'm giving you tips on how to have joy. Because if you can answer that question, if you can answer why you're living, and if you can locate the center of your life and make sure Christ is at the center, and if you can make up your mind to be happy, you will have joy. But then there's another thing. You just can't take yourself too seriously. Can you laugh at yourself? Can you? If you can't, you're in a heap of trouble, okay? Because I guarantee you, there are others laughing at you, okay? It happens. There's not a single person here that somebody hadn't laughed at. I'm not talking laughing with you. I'm talking laughing at you because you did something silly or you looked foolish or you made a bad decision and it was hilarious to somebody else. Oh yeah, everybody, I'm telling you, somebody has laughed at you. How do you deal with that? You get all mad like a puffer fish, Oh, I don't have to take that anymore. You get like Popeye, that's all I can stands and I can't stands no more. I mean, what are you going to do? People are going to laugh at you. What are you going to do? You're going to get your feelings hurt? You're going to take your basketball and go home? I mean, what are you going to do when somebody laughs at you? Here's the thing. Don't take yourself too seriously. Just don't do it. Okay, you are important, but you ain't all that. I'm sorry. I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but you ain't all that. There are people that are doing so much more than you're doing, that are accomplishing so much more, that are so much better looking, have got so much more money, are so much smarter, have so much more ability than you have. Am I hurting your feelings? I don't mean to. Some of you out there crying right now. I don't mean to hurt your feelings. I'm just trying to say we don't need to take ourselves so seriously, because there's always, you know, the fast draw out in the old West. What the old man tell him? Hey, somebody, son, gonna get you one day, because there's always somebody better. Don't take yourself too seriously. If you wrap yourself up in yourself, you're going to be a mighty small, miserable package. Okay? There was a little girl who said, "Twinkle, twinkly, little star, how you wonder what I are." If you take yourself too seriously, you're not going to fit in. You're not going to be able to function. You're not going to make it. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13:11, "When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child." That's the way it is. "But when I became a man, I put away childish things." Let me give you the recipe for misery. You ready for this? Think of yourself. Talk about yourself. Use the word "I" as often as you possibly can. Listen hungrily to what other people say about you and expect to be appreciated and admired by everyone. You are going to be miserable, okay? Because it just doesn't work, does it? Romans 12:3, "For I say through the grace of given to me to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith." When the pronoun "I" becomes our coat of arms, joy flies out the window. Don't take yourself too seriously. You want to be have a life of joy? Lighten up. Okay? Lighten up and enjoy where you are. Enjoy the moment. And that brings us to our final point this morning, and that is make the most of the life you have with the time you have left. Joy comes when we make the effort to make the most of life. Which is better to say, "Look what the world is coming to"? Or is it better to say, "Look who came into the world"? Jesus. Jesus took the world's worst, the cross, and he made the very best of it salvation, hope, life. That's what Jesus did. A heart that overflows with joy does not depend upon the events of life. It does not depend on the external circumstances. You may be in a great condition. You may be in a terrible condition. You may have excellent health. You may have terrible health. You may have a wonderful job. You may have a terrible job. You may be surrounded by people that lift you up and praise you. And you may be surrounded by people who are knocking you down and putting you down. But the circumstances of your life do not determine what is in your heart if you're a person who has joy. The circumstances of your life. Joy is a byproduct of living close to Jesus and allowing him to rule over my life. It's a lot like a beautiful butterfly. You chase it, you're going to find it's always just out of reach. But if you display a sweet disposition toward life, it will come and rest on your shoulder. And it'll be happy there. And you'll be happy. You know, one of the fruit of the Spirit is joy. In Galatians 5:22, joy. If we're going to enjoy any kind of fruit, we have to take time to prepare the soil. We have to sow the seed. We have to cultivate the plant. And we have to wait for the fruit to sweeten and ripen. And that's really the way joy is. You're not going to have it immediately. You're not going to have it all every moment of every waking hour. But if it's going to be something that's going to be displayed in your life, you're going to experience joy if you surrender your heart to God. If you obey Him and live for Him, you're going to be blessed by Him. He is going to bless you with joy. Make the most of the life that you have before life is gone. This afternoon, we're going to finish the tips for a joy-filled life. But I want to close with a story. I found this story, and it has really impacted my life. And this story makes the final point of taking the time you have left and making the most out of it. This story makes that point crystal clear. The older I get, the more I enjoy Saturday mornings. Perhaps it's the quiet solitude that comes with being the first to rise in my house. But the first few hours of a Saturday morning are most enjoyable. A few weeks ago, I was shuffling down in the basement with a hot cup of coffee in one hand, the morning paper in the other. I turned on my ham radio and came across an older-sounding gentleman with a golden voice. You know the kind. He sounded like he should have been in the broadcasting business. He was telling whomever he was talking with about something about 1,000 marbles. I was intrigued, so I stopped and listened to what he had to say. "Well, Tom, it sure sounds like you're busy with your job. I'm sure they pay you well, but it's a shame you have to be away from home and your family so much. It's hard to believe a young fellow should have to work 60 or 70 hours a week just to make ends meet. It's too bad you missed your daughter's piano recital. Let me tell you something, Tom, something that helped me keep a good perspective on my own priorities. I sat down one day and did a little arithmetic. The average person lives about 75 years. Now then, I multiplied 75 times 52 and came up with 3,800. And that is the number of Saturdays that the average person lives in their entire life. 3,900 Saturdays. Now stick with me, Tom. I'm getting to the important part. It took me until I was 54 years old to think about all this in any detail. And by that time, I had lived through over 2,800 Saturdays. So I got to thinking that if I live to be 75, I only have about 1,000 Saturdays left to live and to enjoy. So I went to a toy store, and I bought every single marble they had. I ended up having to visit 3 toy stores to round up 1,000 marbles. I took them home and put them inside a large, clear plastic container right by my bed. And every Saturday since then, I have taken one marble out and thrown it away. I found that by watching the marbles diminish, I focus more on really important things in life. And there's nothing like watching your time here on this earth run out to help you get your priorities straight. Now let me tell you one last thing before I sign off with you and take my lovely wife out for breakfast. This morning I took out my last marble. I took out my last marble out of the container. And I figure that if I make it until next Saturday, then I've been given a little extra time. And the one thing we can all use is a little more time. It was nice to meet you, Tom. I hope you spend more time with your family, and I hope to meet you again here on the band. This is 75-year-old man, K9NZ0, clear and out. Good morning. You could have heard a pin drop on the band when the fella signed off. And I guess he gave us all a lot to think about. I had planned to work on my ham radio antenna that morning, and then I was going to meet up with some of the other fellow operators, and we were going to work on our club newsletter. Instead, I went upstairs and I woke my wife with a kiss. "Come on, honey, I'm taking you and the kids to breakfast." "What brought this on?" she asked. "Oh, nothing special. It's just been a long time since we spent a Saturday together with the kids. And hey, can we stop by a toy store while we're out? I need to buy some marbles." Make the most of the time you have left. You don't know how long that is. Now, there's a number here that have passed 75 and all your marbles are gone. You've lost all your marbles. But there's still life here, and we need to make the most of the time that we have, because it's going to be gone before we know it. We can't waste that life being grumpy and dumpy and just old sad and down in the mouth. We need to have lives of joy. And that joy is going to be yours when you put Christ at the center of your life. You make up your mind to be happy. You determine why you're living. And you don't take yourself too seriously. And you make the most of the life you have with the time you have left. God is the giver of joy, and we have to share it with others. That is the job that God has given us to do. So my encouragement to you this morning is that you make up your mind to be a joyful person. That you make up your mind right now to use the time that God has given you to its fullest. And you become more like Jesus. And you use the time that God gave you to not only have joy yourself, but to share and to bring joy to others. If there's a way we can help you today, we encourage you to come to Jesus. If you're not a Christian, obey the gospel. If you believe Jesus is the Son of God, then repent of your sins, confess your faith, be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, become a child of God. And if you're not faithful to your Lord, if you've not lived the life that you should live, then get on track so that joy can be yours. And come to Jesus right now if you need to, as we stand and as we sing.